This is the Rufus Project. It's free. It's like three podcasts for the price of one. Even though all three would still be free, never mind. You know what? We love bringing you this podcast for free, and we can keep doing that if it's a little bit of extra help from you as well. How can you help? So glad you asked. First up, find the Rufus Project on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, on Ustream. Head to our homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, and share us on social media. The more people that find out, the more people that listen, the more follows we get, the more we can give you guys. Oh yeah. Don't want to share the entire thing? Maybe if we bring out something that you like or one of our competitions you think would appeal to others. Share us around for that reason. If you don't want to share and would like to give us something a little bit more substantial, if you head to that homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com, you can hit the donate button and throw a few dollars our way. Want something material for your dollars? We've got you covered there too. We have a Spreadshirt store, therufusproject.spreadshirt.com.au. Here you can find a fine selection of men's, women's and kids' shirts with a grand total of one design, but you can pick your colour. We've also got the recent addition of the Rufus Project beverage dispenser. That's right, a coffee mug with our unofficial and public domain logo prominently on the side. You know you want it, go get it. Finally, yep, I'm going to pimp myself out. If you have a product or service that you would like us to talk about in this very advertising section that I'm putting in at the very front of the podcast, let us know. You can get in touch with us by email at rufusreviews.gmail.com. We definitely would love to hear from you, and we look forward to any support you can give us. Thanks a lot. Now on with this podcast. Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, your fortnightly guide to all wonderful geeky things that we think are cool and we hope you think are cool too. I'm your host Trevor Holland and we will be very shortly hearing from my co-host, good friend and king of retro cinema in Brisbane, Christian Fletcher. And what a great podcast we have in store for you this time around. We get our hands on the new Stan streaming service and let you know what that's like. Christian actually takes a break from the cult movies and looks at his favourite music instead. Quite the mix there. We've got a review of Into the Woods, and our redeeming features is back and forth with a movie that pretty much does come from the trash. And just to prove that geeks come in all flavours, our very special interview this podcast is with Peter Hartwig, Brisbane's own international INBA bodybuilding champion. Perfect interview for our local wildlife section. Of course, we've got geek news for you, upcoming events, and what a killer of a competition. You'll love it, guys. Well, in the meantime, though, sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. And now it's time for the geek news. To open up, I'm afraid, yes, I do have to start with something stupid a politician said about all the planned security upgrades for Australia, particularly in relation to metadata retention. The Australian Attorney General has actually come out saying that he believes that no warrants should be needed for people to access this metadata information. He believes timely access to telecommunication data can provide agencies with vital leads before evidence can be lost or destroyed. However, warrant applications are resource-intensive and can take days, if not weeks, to prepare and complete. Delaying an agency's ability to begin an investigation by this length of time would seriously harm their ability to investigate crimes or threats to national security. So in other words, they don't need warrants because terrorism. You know, I might have a little less problem with this if they could actually define what metadata they want to keep and exactly what is going to be required to access it. You see, you look at the statistics overseas and metadata really hasn't had a big impact on actual crime prevention or investigation. Really, it hasn't. Don't have to search very far to see that. Added also to that the Federal Australian Police have stated that they themselves don't know what metadata they need to do their jobs when it comes to this investigation, and have openly admitted that it could be used for things like, say, copyright lawsuits or investigations further down the track. Something which the government has said will never happen, and, you know, we totally believe them, don't we? Let's just move on to something better, okay? Well, first we may have had Karen Gillam, who you may know as Amy Pond from Doctor Who. She made her Marvel Cinematic debut playing Nebula in Guardians of the Galaxy, and regular listeners will know that I freaking love that movie! Well, guess what? An actual Doctor Who is entering the Marvel visual universe, I guess you can say. David Tennant is stepping up and is actually going to be in one of the upcoming Marvel Netflix series. He's going to come in the AKA Jessica Jones series, playing a bad guy. To be more precise, a bad guy called Zebediah Kilgrave, also known as the Purple Man, who apparently can make people do whatever he says. So we're going to have David Tennant bossing people around, and they're going to have to do what he says. This could get very, very interesting. I look forward to seeing him in action as a Marvel bad guy. Back to some more fun Australian news, this time to do with gaming. Hotline Miami 2 has been refused classification by the Australian Classification Board. It really is a pretty regular occurrence. You know, we have an R rating now, but apparently, no, adults still can't see scary, scary things that could be perceived as sexual violence or drug taking with some sort of positive outcome. Well, we can see it in movies, but not in games, because as we know from all the toy catalogues out there, games are kid things, aren't they? That's why they put an R-rated game beside a Barbie doll in a frickin' Target catalogue. Calm, calm, calm. I wasn't going to rant. Stop the rant. Mind you, the creator of Hotline Miami 2 has taken this quite calmly, really, and has explicitly stated that any Australians who can't get legitimate access to his game may as well just pirate it. This refusing classifications of games and having this government board does nothing to prevent this inappropriate content from reaching Australian hands and the hands of adult Australian gamers. As an aside to that, and just another example of what the hell is wrong with the games rating in this country? PS4 copies of Saints Row Re-Elected that were sold by retail in Australia have been recalled. Why? Because content that had to be removed from the original release way back when it first came out for the PlayStation 3 and various other things was accidentally left in the copies that have been released for the PlayStation 4 in Australia, which means that it's an unclassified title, which means Australian game stores can't sell it, which means they have to do a product recall to cover their butts. Seriously, no one's going to take it back. It's just an exercise in doing what must be done, I guess. Still, hey look, I took the sacrifice, okay? I actually had a US version of the original game, and I have a US version of the re-elected version, and I have played the content that is too nasty for Australia, and I'm still perfectly okay. please, we just need to bring in a rating system. It can be self-regulated and the government can step in if enough complaints are raised that something has been inappropriately rated in the on the game shelves. But we have an R rating, 18 plus. I don't know how that could happen. I'm ranting again. Sorry. Calm down. Back to nicer news. The Stan streaming service, which you will hear a review of very shortly, has now launched in Australia. And you know what? It actually looks kind of okay. It certainly can't compare to Netflix in the US, but if you're looking at a local Australian service, it's worth looking at. Anyway, I'll leave more of that for the review that you will hear very, very, very soon. If you're more into streaming your own stuff and you're one of those PlayStation 4 owners who have been missing the media playback capabilities of the old PS3, guess what? If you are a US PlayStation subscriber, and of course you can be a US PlayStation subscriber in Australia, it's very easy, guys, then Plex has released a standalone app for the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation 4. I've played around with it. It's not as complete as the other versions out there, but apparently the developers are working on bringing more of the functionality of Plex, which is an excellent media server, by the way, into the PlayStation platforms. So there you go. The PlayStation 4 now can play your media through your local network. Excellent stuff. And to wrap it up, just a bit of Rufus Project news to let you know that we now have a fan page on Bandcamp. Not too much there at the moment, but we will be picking up some of the better, say, game soundtracks that we can get our hands on, as well as some of our favourite artists and standalone special editions of podcasts, like say the Thrilling Adventure Hour Night Vale crossover. You'll be able to see the stuff that we like by heading to bandcamp.com/TheRufusProject, and we will put more on there for you to check out. You can stream it off the site. Of course, if you like it, you can buy it yourself. Lots and lots of fun. And that's the news. Well, with the lead up and a fairly short lead in for people that got early access, the Stan streaming service has now launched in Australia, and reviewing it is a bit of a tricky beast. I almost have to give it two separate scores when we look at the review. I'll start with the good stuff, okay? First of all, listen, if you compare this to what is already officially available in Australia, it is pretty impressive from the word go. There's a good selection of TV and movie content, and quite a lot of Australian and UK stuff is on there too. Some pretty solid programming, thanks to partnerships with both the ABC in Australia and BBC in the UK. Okay, you're going to find something to watch on this, and at $10 a month, it certainly does blow the competitors, being Quickflix. Yeah, they're just no good. And Foxtel's Presto service, which also is more expensive and less quality, it really does show them up, and it is a very positive step for Australian streaming services. Little niggles from that side of things. If you are using a PC, you have to install Microsoft Silverlight. This is causing some concerns around the place because Silverlight is pretty much an obsolete technology and pretty much everyone else is using HTML5. If you want to get techie, you know what I mean. But with regards to the apps, they do work quite well. It ties in with both AirPlay and Chromecast, and the Chromecast connection is pretty solid. I can vouch for that personally. However, the problem is with the Android side that it is only available on a fairly limited number of devices. And also, when you're looking at actually watching it on your TV, if you don't have AirPlay set up, if you don't have a Chromecast, you're out of luck. There is no PlayStation or Xbox app for this. It's basically you need to have one of these devices to hook into your phone, to hook into the Stan app to get it on that big screen unless you've got a full-on multimedia PC plugged into your television. But really, for the price point of $10 per month and comparing it with the current Australian competition, you know, it is pretty easy to recommend Stan. It will improve as its selection expands. It really does need a bit more in the movie department. Mind you, if you like the Lord of the Rings or the James Bond movies, you're covered there. The search function is a little bit limited in that it only really draws from either the title or the description of whatever you're searching for. I did try when I found Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. I thought, I wonder what else I've got on this with George Carlin in it. Because, yeah, I'm a bit of a George Carlin fan. Searched up George Carlin, just stuff that had George in the name or the description. Not all that robust, Stan, okay? It'd be good if you could expand that search function to bring in more options and really help people find what they're looking for. Following on from that, the discovery within the service itself is still a bit lacking. It does have things put into rather broad genres, but there's quite a lot of overlap there, of course. And in fact, if say you go to TV and you go down all the genres and you go all TV down the bottom, it's just those lists just copy straight over. So you do see the same program repeated several times. It makes for a nice long list, but it doesn't really show the true amount of content that's available. It was a bit strange though, when I first used it, I did have some buffering issues, and this was in watching it in SD, so there really shouldn't have been any problems. For those out there with the connection who want it, HD is supported on this device, which is another thing which sets it apart from Foxtel Presto and QuickFlix. Okay, sounds pretty good so far. Where I think the review takes a bit of a downturn is that we have to address the elephant in the room. Netflix from the US is readily available in Australia. Now, when compared to the range available on Netflix and the availability on Netflix on pretty much any device you have in your house, it just can't compete at this stage. True, Stan has managed to get some Amazon series for its screening in Australia, so that's something that Netflix doesn't even have in the US. So, say shows like Transparent or Mozart in the Jungle, which have both been getting pretty high props around the place, you're not going to see them on Netflix even if you do subscribe to the US version. They're pretty much only available on Stan in Australia, or Amazon if you happen to subscribe to that as well, which is also a possibility, but hey, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now, okay? It's also going to be interesting to see what happens when Netflix does launch in Australia, considering that Stan has already nabbed the rights to some stuff which is pretty much Netflix exclusive over there. They've got the entirety of Breaking Bad, but I'm pretty sure that'll be shared across services. What I'm going to be really interested in seeing is whether both Netflix and Stan can offer the Breaking Bad spin-off, Better Call Saul, in Australia. Going to be quite the battle. So I suppose in summary, if you're not already signed up for a streaming service either locally or from overseas, Stan is certainly worth looking at if you have the correct setup. Obviously, if you're looking at going Android, double check to make sure that the Stan app will work on your device before you go any further. And of course, if you do want to watch it on the TV, you need to have those intermediate things set up, like say either the PC directly plugged into your TV or the Chromecast or AirPlay, depending on your flavour of mobile device. If, however, you've already got Netflix, you're already set up with a VPN or an unblocking service, then it's really hard to recommend you making the switch. They are offering a 1 month free trial, so really, you've got nothing to lose by checking this out. And I am confident that as they build up that library, when you're looking at an Australian streaming service, this is certainly going to be probably the strongest contender until Netflix does launch later in the year. So yeah, go out there, check it out, let us know what you think. I was pleasantly surprised, However, at this point, I'm going to hold off until, you know, more stuff launches and we see what the streaming landscape is going to be like in Australia in the, over the next 12 months. Now, for all of my features on the Rufus Project, I always seem to touch on cult films, trash cinema, anything to do with what I do for a living, being a film exhibitor. I thought for this one, why don't we look at something a little bit different? I've been, in the back of my mind, putting together a bit of a list of what I call the Desert Island albums. Now, talking a bit more with music, we all have albums that we absolutely adore. You know the ones I mean, the ones where you can't stop listening to them. You've listened to them so much that the vinyl LP or the CD is so scratched that it barely plays through anymore. And that's when you're so familiar with every track. You'll hear a single from that album being played on the radio, and you almost assume that the song following on the album will be the song that plays afterwards. I thought it would be fun to have a look at some of my favourite Desert Island albums, ones that I would happily be stuck on a desert island with. The first album which will be added to my list is The Dreaming by Kate Bush from 1982, possibly the greatest album ever released by a recording artist in any decade. Now, after being introduced to the Fairlight, which was used a lot by Peter Gabriel in the early 80s, Kate Bush decided to dabble with a few more things. On her album Never Forever in 1980, which featured the hit Babushka, she kind of did dabble a lot with these kind of synthesizer sounds, but it wasn't until The Dreaming in 1982 that Kate went fully psycho. She calls The Dreaming her I've Gone Mad album, and it's easy to see why. Filled with some of her least successful singles, but some of the most bizarre songs of all time, opening with a track about a quest for knowledge, which then leads into a song about bank robbers trying to get away with the loot and failing miserably, only for the album to end with a song called Get Out of My House, which has Kate Bush braying like a donkey, and this song being a tribute to the film The Shining. So rich, so obviously divided into part one and part two. Definitely nothing can maintain the manic first half, and I definitely think play this loud with the earphones in and it may well change your life. I do have the theory that if you are to play this song forward or possibly backwards, the secrets to life will be revealed to us. Interestingly, track five, Leave It Open, actually features a line where she does actually have words at the end, which play forward and backwards. She has a line which says, we let the weirdness in. However, if you play that line backwards, it says, and they said we were buried here. Ooh, creepy stuff, Kate. So The Dreaming from 1982, the greatest album ever made. The symbol always keep alive the territorial war. Erase the race, the claim, the place, and say we dig for ore, or dangle dangles in a bottle and a push him from the pull of the bush. Something a bit more recent and something that might be a bit more obscure to our listeners, it's Foster the People. In 2011, they released their first album, Tortures. After having done some EPs in the years prior to this, Tortures was their debut album, which featured the hit song Pumped Up Kicks. Now, this song kind of very much sounded to me like Summer of Love and late 60s psychedelic music, so this song quite got me into them, got me quite hooked. But it was when I borrowed a friend's copy of Tortures, which is the album that song featured on, that I realized, oh my god, all the other songs are even so much better. And it got to the stage where I was falling in love with every song on the album, to the point of I would then show other people and they were then going around singing all those songs. One of those few cases when every song on the album you enjoy and look forward to. Tortures from Foster the People from 2011. I've tried to get into their subsequent work, but nothing can rival Tortures. I definitely recommend it. Looking at one of my other albums would probably be Garbage's Version 2.0, which came out in 1998. Following the band's debut in 1995 with their self-titled album Garbage, they went on to more of a sonic landscape sound and more of an industrial electronic vibe. This included the hit song Special, When I Grow Up, I Think I'm Paranoid. And it's one of those albums you can pretty much listen to from start to finish and be taken on a journey. Standout tracks include Medication,
The trick is to keep breathing and you look so fine. Interestingly, about 6 songs were released off this album and it made Garbage even more worldwide superstars. They have never been able to repeat the success of version 2.0, but it still ranks as one of the greatest albums ever made. Some other albums which should possibly get a mention would be a compilation, More ABBA Gold by ABBA. I know we've heard the songs from ABBA Gold a bit too much since its release in 1992. However, the following year, they released a sequel compilation, which included a lot of songs that were left off that and a lot more songs that were big in Europe and, say, Australia. That includes songs like The Day Before You Came, Summer Night City, and Under Attack. So if you're a bit of a fan of ABBA and want to get into some of their more obscure stuff, I definitely recommend More ABBA Gold. I could happily listen to this from start to finish as an album. Whilst on the subject of ABBA, I'd probably say that their last album, The Visitors, from 1981, would probably be my favourite album. Whether, though, I could listen to it from start to finish, as it is such an eclectic mix of songs, things like Two for the Price of One, When All is Said and Done, and the opening track, The Visitors, which has a real Cold War theme about it. Other notable mentions, Cosmic Thing by the B-52s, and possibly 2 albums, Sam's Town and Hot Fuss by the Killers, but I'd probably say Hot Fuss would be one that you would happily listen to from start to finish, but Sam's Town features more of my favourite songs, but yeah, Hot Fuss is definitely one would definitely work well on a road trip. I'd really put it up there with Tortures by Foster the People. I look forward to hearing about what some of your favourite Desert Island albums are, and maybe even our fellow podcaster Trevor.
Into the Woods is based on a musical that's been around for a few years. Apparently it's got quite the following. I will honestly admit, though, I was not aware of the musical before seeing this particular movie. But you've just got to wonder, is that really going to be an issue? Well, I guess that's what I'm here to take a look at. So just as a quick rundown, Into the Woods is a take across a number of different fairy tales. In the movie, we see James Corden and Emily Blunt as the baker and the baker's wife, and they have a bit of an issue because they want to have a child. It's not working. That's when the witch turns up, played by Meryl Streep, and tells them that there is a curse in the house because of James Corden's father's shenanigans, and to lift it, they need to collect a number of items for the witch. This gives us our tie-in with the classic fairy tales. For instance, they need a golden slipper, Cinderella, a cow as white as snow, Jack and the Beanstalk with the cow from there, a cape as red as blood, Little Red Riding Hood, and a lock of golden hair. Well, that can only come from Rapunzel, hey? And alongside that, you get to see the story of the other characters as well. The title really comes from the fact that they've all got to go into the wood to find what they're seeking. Now, it's almost become the norm with interpretations of musicals that the visuals are going to be pretty lush, and the wood itself is quite the impressive background for the goings-on within this movie. Again, being a musical, though, you really do need to hang quite a bit on the songs themselves. Everyone sings well. You've got Anna Kendrick as Cinderella, and I really couldn't help but think, well, Pitch Perfect Medieval just came out. And the songs, I'm afraid, really were a bit of a letdown. For the most part, they were quite repetitive and didn't really seem to have much flow. They were quite jarring. Probably the biggest exception to that is when the two princes, yes, there are two princes, one for Anna Kendrick's Cinderella and the other one for Mackenzie Morsey's Rapunzel. These two are played by Billy Magnuson and Christopher Pine. And their song is just truly hilarious. And for me, it pretty much was the best song of the movie, and it happens fairly early in the piece. And there's the rub. This movie just seems to go for a bit too long, and the songs just don't quite catch you. Meryl Streep does come in towards the end with quite a powerful song as the witch. And Meryl Streep, I guess, is where you're going to see most of the actual acting in this. When I say acting, what you're seeing is Meryl Streep in full scenery chewing splendor. She really can chew scenery, and it is very enjoyable. And it's good because her portrayal adds an extra level of energy that the rest of the movie seems to be lacking. Now, I don't think I'm giving away much in the way of spoilers here, because the promotion of this movie really was focused on be careful what you wish for, and is your happy ending really a happy ending? That featured quite heavily. So when everyone does get the happy ending, you just know something else is coming along. It is broadcast from a fair way away that there is a twist just when everything seems good. And it's after this twist that the movie does take a very different tone. And while there was lots of fun goings on in the lead up to it, it does get quite dark quite fast. And you really find yourself a bit gobsmacked that that is where they went. Now, I know I probably do sound pretty down on this movie, but I will say that it does have its enjoyable moments. And overall, it's okay. If you do enjoy the songs a bit more than, say, I did, you probably are going to enjoy the movie a lot more than I did. So I'm afraid, at the end of the day, though, for me, Into the Woods, it was kind of okay with a few highlights scattered throughout.
You wish to have the curse reversed? Go to the wood and bring me back a cow as white as milk.
These beans carry magic.
The cape as red as blood.
Oh dear, how uneasy I feel.
The hair as yellow as corn. The slipper as pure as gold. Go to the wood!
Into the woods without delay.
Well, we're very, very excited for the first proper redeeming features for 2015, and boy, did Christian pick a doozy for us to start with. I think he's maybe trying to get revenge for some of the stuff that I put him through last time. Speaking of Christian, he's right here. Hello, Christian. How are you?
Great, thank you, Trevor. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Now, I thought before we get started, I'd try something a little bit different before we say what the movie is. And I had a bit of a search around, and I found some reviews of this particular movie. And I found one in particular that I thought you might like to hear, and I'd like to get your take on what you think of this person's perspective. Like, if you haven't heard redeeming features before, what we do is we take traditionally or infamously bad movies and see if there are any redeeming features. It's pretty straightforward. But, you know, we're not the only ones who try to look at these movies in a positive light. For example, our friend NJ on Amazon.com said about this movie, "Achingly beautiful. I really can't recommend this film enough to those of you who enjoy beautifully written, meticulously acted, and stunningly visual films. The animatronics took my breath away, as did the rewarding and at times challenging script. Valerie Vomit's own subplot is heart-wrenching to say the least, as she struggles with her nauseous disposition only to overcome her weakness in the penultimate scene, which was a real bittersweet moment of elation and regret. We follow these characters as they progress from prisoners to free citizens, and I think this is the most satisfying of heroic transformations I have ever witnessed on film. Buy this movie 5 stars.
So, well, Christian, MJ.
And can you see where NJ's coming from with this movie?
Well, look, I'm taking the piss kind of sense comes to mind, but excuse my language, but I don't know. It's quite interesting because being a fan of bad cinema, I suppose even calling it that sounds terrible, but this sort of so bad it's good films, I can understand he almost praises it and sees it as, I don't know, his cult classic. I don't know, but then it's hard to see. A lot of times, too, with movies that certain people enjoy, like I know we've had a lot of talk in the past about I love a movie like Grease 2, and you go, ah, it all comes down to a point of reference in terms of you may have seen that movie watching up as a kid. This MJ may have grown up in the 90s when it was played, I don't know, on American television a lot. I think he literally thinks it's the opposite of everything he has typed.
After that glowing review that may or may not have been taking the piss, let's move on to what the movie is. Rated a grand total of 2.7 out of 10 on IMDb. We are travelling back to 1987 and having a look at the Garbage Pail Kids movie. So what inspired this choice, Christian? I am curious.
Well, being a cult movie lover and exhibitor, I've heard of this title quite a lot. It's been bantered around as the infamous bad movie of the 80s, sort of alongside there with Troll 2. And I believe, not remembering the film when it came out or being familiar with the Garbage Pail Kids, the trading cards were quite big in America. And, so I was I do a lot of my research through, looking at American cinema as well. And I've been hearing this title a lot. And I actually, believe it or not part of this podcast, I actually sat down and watched the movie about 2 years ago. And nauseatingly bad however we sum it up, it still made me decide to pitch to Trevor to do this as the redeeming features. And, I was interested to see how someone else would take it because, really, I'm in awe about it. I try and think of its time and place of when it came out, but even then it stumps me. So, Trevor, I'm excited to hear what you think of the Garbage Pail Kids movie from 1987.
It's
Where to start?
Exactly, where to start. And
well, interestingly, one of my first points, actually talking about somewhere to start, I thought this was funny. Well, MGM has since bought the rights. I don't believe the film was originally released by MGM. It may have been, but I know that you can now subsequently get it on DVD through MGM. But I thought, to me, this summed it up perfectly. When you have a movie that is produced by a bubblegum company, that's when you start to realise, they might not have a big future in showbiz. And I think this film is a good testament to that. So from there, we go into this movie.
Well, that was probably one of the first things I noticed, and I put a big question mark beside it. A Topps chewing gum production? Really?
Come up with a new production company for your movie, surely. I don't know.
Well, but yeah, being that this was based basically on trading cards, the trading cards featured pretty heavily in the intro, so if you weren't aware of the style of the cards, you do get a pretty good primer in the opening credits. Even the actual human actors get trading cards in the intro.
Oh, yeah, and I thought that was a quirky touch, but I think pretty much not knowing about the cards themselves and the history of Garbage Pail Kids, I feel that all reference to the cards was pretty much thrown out as soon as those opening credits finished, and then we were just plunged into this. I don't know, always that interesting world. Now, Trevor, we often seem to dabble in adaptations, let's just say that, with a lot of the movies we look at. And I think this was one of those cases of perhaps, not enough material to sustain a movie. Well, definitely not enough material, but I really don't think they knew where to go with it. And I don't know. And the biggest thing that stood out to me from the moment it started was, is this trying to be an adult film, or is this trying to be not an adult film in that respect? Is this a film supposed to be enjoyed by adults, or is this actually a film for children? And I just felt that it battled with that the entire time.
Yeah, it did, and boy, did it get a pretty solid creep factor in a few of the scenes due to that imbalance. Quite early in the piece, the main character, who's a kid who looks like 13, 14 maybe, gets dumped into a muddy river and gets back to where he works, being an antique shop. Actually, I think I'm getting ahead of myself, but at one point a year, he basically gets absolutely covered in sewage, goes back to the antique shop, and has a bath. But the thing is, he has a bath in front of the shop owner, who's this rather strange man, and all the Garbage Pail Kids just all watching him have a bath, and it was kind of creepy.
Oh, it was strange, you know. But already you've got to get over the fact that you're looking at these garbage pile kids, which is definitely a sight to behold. You're given a bit of a segueing off from the whole creepy thing, like you were saying, Trev. These characters, like they may work well on a trading card, but bringing them to life, I really thought it was an interesting choice because this was pre CGI. This was pre everything you're seeing is real, and hey, you're seeing kids or little people in suits. So the creep factor, definitely, Trevor, but I have that in my notes too. Bathtub scene, question mark.
why are they doing that? Why are they watching him bathe? What's going on?
But in terms of the look of the characters, Trevor, you know, once you got over the ghastliness of it, I don't think you ever quite could. I don't know. There's something severely wrong about them.
Certainly, I know it's probably a more modern term that really wasn't around back when they made this movie, but the whole Uncanny Valley thing, it's just like they've tried to make them just realistic enough to be, to make them extra disturbing. I mean, they're not meant to be pleasant to look at. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but between the look and the style of them, the portrayals and the general characters. I mean, they look like kids. They do spend a lot of time acting like kids, but some of the stuff they come out with is not really appropriate for kids.
Oh, but yeah, definitely. And I suppose with characters called Valerie Vomit and Windy Winston, I can understand why really it is tailoring more to, I suppose, a teen or later teen audience. And I really think that kids, I don't know if kids were interested to go and see this, but they would have been damn scared out of their brain, I think, if they went along. You know, the fact too that, as you said, yeah, they were verging on, you know, they were, you know, trying to look quite lifelike, but the fact that their mouths kind of didn't really move very much either really threw you as a, okay, obviously I'm not watching the real thing here, but no, not for a minute would you think that you were, just letting you know that, listeners.
Yeah, but even with those characters, well, the ones you mentioned, I mean, a lot of them were pretty much one-dimensional and described by their name, like Valerie Vomit, Windy Winston. There was Nat Nerd, who was pimply and wet himself the entire time, was his entire gag. But then you got things like Greaser Greg and, who was the one? Messy Tessie, who I found most disturbing because, like, Messy Tessie, who basically always had a running nose, was her gag, but she was always wanting to make out with the main character. And Greaser Greg, he was just an absolute lecherous little creep.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, yeah, and the thing is, too, like, well, Trevor, would you let your kids watch this?
No.
You know, that's what I mean. Like, I'm thinking to myself, you know, they're going for this adult sort of crude humor, you know, yet, you know, it fits in with the trading cards. But it seems, too, that, I don't know, the more I'm talking to you, I'm thinking to myself, maybe it was really pitched as a film for adults. You know, it wasn't really supposed to be something for kids because I can't find anything in there really that kids would not be quite scared by or quite disturbed by. But as we said, you know, they are these type of characters, and if parents were worried, they would have not taken their kids. And it sounds like a lot of people didn't take their kids or didn't go at all. But then leading off from, you know, you've set up with the, you know, him having a bath after the sewage and all this. And it's interesting, his, I suppose, love interest, or the girl that the young boy becomes interested in, is a girl that's probably what seems like 5 years his senior. And it really just seems like, was this part written possibly for an older boy? He pulled out. We had to get the director's son to fill in at the last minute. But it really just feels so strange.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like the movie may be pitched at like the 13, 14-year-old who does yearn after the older young adult girl. But even saying that, with the main kid, he himself, like early in the piece, he just leans over and sneakily sniffs her hair and does pretty much, you know, spies on her, peeks around the corner, makes sure, runs up to her as soon as her boyfriend leaves, and basically stalks the girl. I really couldn't get much sympathy for this kid.
Oh, definitely. And he actually, to harp on an older movie, he actually reminded me of the kid out of Troll 2, who was just as equally annoying. So maybe the maybe it seems to be a running theme in these bad movies to have a really annoying child actor in the lead.
Well, at least but, the Troll 2 kid wasn't a stalker.
Yeah, exactly. And this had stalk. Yeah, this was strange. But what really, you know, obviously we don't want to spoil too much for our listeners out there, but one thing that pretty much I deciphered pretty much from this film is it's pretty much a younger boy after an older girl, and they come together through fashion. Care to elaborate?
Yeah, so the older girl, by the way, whose name is Tangerine.
That does not describe her 80s leggings that she's wearing, which they could have done something like that, couldn't they?
she sells her fashion out of a car boot at the local nightclub. Kid Dodger, his name, manages to tag along and decides that after seeing the garbage pail kids make him an outfit to help him score with the chick, basically puts them to work making clothes for Tangerine. So he sets up his own little sweatshop using the garbage pail kids in the basement of this antique shop.
Very children friendly, isn't it? Already. We're probably not even 20, 30 minutes into the film.
Yeah.
But that's what I found quite interesting. Like, you know, it led on a bit more to this, but it did sort of also give, you know, it made you sort of realize that the Garbage Pail kids had a heart. And, you know, there was more to them than this girl that vomits all the time, this girl with a runny nose. And it sort of, you know, obviously we'll touch on this a bit later, but it really tried to develop that whole idea that, you know, we're a bit out of the ordinary, but when, you know, we don't really fit in anywhere. But to have him pretty much just use them to make clothing, that kind of lost me a little bit. But we progressed.
Mm-hmm. After they saved him and everything. What a...
Yeah, exactly. But her, you know, selling the fashion out of the boot, I used to think it was kebabs he'd sell outside nightclubs, but it sounds like Tangerine had cotton on to used clothing. So, but then you've got the whole time too, her trying to avoid her boyfriend and her friend who are, you know, dressed all in their leather and their very Frankie Goes to Hollywood style garb. And it's interesting because, yeah, the whole time she's, you know, is she falling for this Dodger boy as well? So it kind of set up this really weird thing, and you're like, do we look at these characters as a leading man, leading lady? I'm not sure.
But then I think they're probably with the twist, and it's safe to say, and I'm pretty sure this is in the intro, that spoilers will happen in Redeeming Features. So if you don't want Garbage Pail Kids spoiled,
need to happen.
But like quite early in the piece, once the clothing does come into it, they make it really obvious really soon that the Tangerine is only interested in getting those clothes.
Oh, so obvious. They don't even try and hide it or build up a bit of tension. She's into with it straight away, you know?
So I was like, okay, so he's using the Garbage Pail Kids to make the clothes. She's using him to get the clothes. Where's it going to end?
Oh, and they get all of this story from a packet of trading cards or bubblegum cards? This is what baffled me. But the plot thickens.
The plot does thicken indeed. So there's also the reason why they were in the garbage pail in the first place. That they escape from, thanks to Dodger's bumbling when he gets into a fight with Tangerine's boyfriend. Apparently there are more Garbage Pail Kids that get mentioned but never get seen, who they believe are at the State Institute for the Ugly, I believe it's called.
Which I believe there's one in every town, possibly. Yeah. I don't know, but they make it out that there is. And it's like the entire town is in on catching any uglies. That's what seems to run through the movie as well, too. So, you know, so look out if you don't get up to par, because you'll be locked in this house for the ugly, but which was kind of a weird theme going through it. So, but you know, it does have its eventual payoff, I suppose, at the end. So. Yeah.
But I like how the adult, the great man senior, I think he's called, something along those lines.
Yeah, it's Anthony Newley.
But he keeps saying that he never was able to find this institution and then, you know, find the other Garbage Pail Kids who we believe were captured there. But within 5 minutes of going outside, to actually find it, they spot a truck with State Institute for the Ugly stamped clearly along the side. So he's tried really hard to find it. Yeah, you can tell.
Oh, definitely. He just needs to look outside.
and then they never make more of this. Like, they finally get there. They're getting ready to save the kids, and this garbage truck goes by, and then about 10 minutes later, he just says, "We were too late for the rest of them. Remember the garbage truck that went out?" So it's like, okay, so the rest of them were just murdered and dumped in the garbage, but nothing more is made of that. It's just like, oh, we're too late for them. Let's just save these ones. That's all right.
Yeah, exactly. They thought, oh, maybe the film would go even more sinister if we looked into that too much. So as our listeners are probably understanding by this stage, that we are finding it very irredeemable and definitely a quirky film. But look, go back to, I suppose, 1987. I don't know if you were familiar, Trevor, with Garbage Pail Kids movie a thing out here. I'm not sure.
I guess I've known about it. I've known of its existence, but I'd never actually had the opportunity or indeed inclination to check it out prior to this.
You had to be forced to do it.
I did. But yeah, if you want to find a movie, I think if you want to find a movie that's just packs in more inconsistencies per scene than most other movies out there, this could be a good one to check out.
Oh, definitely. And it kind of reminds me, like going back to what I said before about adaptations, it kind of reminds me, not that I put this alongside Super Mario Brothers, but it reminds me of a concept where they've taken, you know, this an original, in that, you know, Mario case, the game, in this case, the trading cards or the bubblegum cards, and try to flesh it out to be something that, hey, it's not enough to last a 90-minute movie. And I felt, even though, as you said, they've thrown so much in, but they've had to do that to pad it out. But really, they've given them these almost backstories or this world to exist in that really no one's had any chance to care about. You exist on cardboard. It's just, it's really fascinating to see what they actually can achieve and what they actually came up with plot-wise. And it's just like they threw everything in, including the kitchen sink, and it's just so drenched in the 80s, it's not funny.
Yeah, well, I suppose if we're going to... I really don't know if we're going to be able to make much of a list here. I know I don't really have much to speak of, but do you have any redeeming features for this particular movie?
Well, I'm not going to say the character, the look of the Garbage Pail Kids movie, because honestly, I'm almost too frightened to think about them again. I don't want that vision in my mind again. Redeeming features, look, if you want to look at... I always have to put this as a historical context, but I suppose if you want to look at something that is just so late 80s, but probably also seeing that if you want to see how a studio, or in this case a bubblegum or a trading card production company, can produce something based on a very slight product and make it into a full-fledged movie, you've got to see this because, yeah, as Trevor said, they've thrown everything into it, and just being able to see what they're able to come up with is, I suppose, out of interest's sake, see it, but, you know, honestly, your life won't change if you never see it. So as you can see, Trevor, it is getting quite hard to find a redeemable feature for this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main redeeming feature and the only thing that does come at towards the end is, basically at the end when, of course, they finally defeat the big bad guy, being Tangerine's boyfriend, not the ones that murdered the rest of the Garbage Pail Kids in the home. and Tangerine goes, oh, it looks like Dutch is okay after all. And he just turns her and gives her the biggest smackdown diss. Sorry, Tangerine, you're just not pretty anymore. It's like, that probably was the most poignant moment of the entire film. It's just like, wow, that actually pretty much is a logical step and is almost poignant after this mess of a movie that led up to it.
Oh, definitely. Well, even as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, no, they're not going to honestly have him go, no, it's all okay. So when he did that, yeah, as you said, poignant. And it was possibly one of the only scenes to save a pretty horrid movie. So it's hard to find those redeemable features. But hey, if you've got an interest, see it, but I'd see 1,000 more movies before I'd see that one.
Yeah, definitely. Don't put this one too high on the list, guys.
And I'm honestly, shame on you, MGM, for buying the rights to this, or even releasing it. I don't know which order that happened, but it's funny because MGM now have the rights to Troll 2. So I'm wondering if someone in one of their offices is going, we could have a whole bad movie subgenre here that's looking to be conquered. So I definitely put that alongside the same movie like Troll 2 as well. So if you're interested in those late 80s cult classics, so bad they're good, maybe check out Garbage Pail Kids. But we might have some other movies we could have possibly recommended even better throughout the course of the podcast.
So, but at the end of it, I think it's pretty safe to say that Garbage Pail Kids, sorry, you're not really redeemable.
Yeah, go back to the garbage pile, you're trash.
Yeah, definitely belongs in the garbage.
Harsh, but true.
Harsh, but true. So, listen, if you're out there and if you have seen the Garbage Pail Kids and you have a differing opinion, like our friend NJ at the start, let us know. God. I mean, we're definitely interested in hearing all views. You may actually have some redeeming features that you think we have overlooked in the mess of this movie. So, get in touch with us there. Also, what I thought we'd start doing this year is giving you a heads up as to what the next redeeming feature movie is going to be. That way, if you get a chance to watch it before the next podcast, or you want to send us your comments at any time, it gives you a bit more of a chance to get in there, and again, gives us, a bit of an extra perspective to look at when we check these out. So, after doing some exhaustive research...
is that what you call it?
Absolutely. We decided that it'd be fun to visit a couple of old friends who have appeared in movies we have looked at previously. Actually, I'm just not sure if our good friend John Travolta has been in a redeeming feature one yet, but I know Olivia Newton-John certainly has.
She's been in a couple, yeah.
So we're going to pay a visit to Two of a Kind from 1983. If you get a chance to watch that in the near future, definitely drop us a line. We'd love to hear your thoughts as to why that may be redeeming. Now, I haven't actually even seen it yet, so I have no idea.
And I don't really actually know anything about the film aside from the two leads and the year it came out. So I'm going in completely blind. So I may come out completely blind.
may need to be completely blind to watch it. I don't know.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to hear what you think, Trevor, and the listeners have any feedback about that too. So 1983, Two of a Kind. Look forward, I think, to popping that in the DVD player.
It should be magical.
Okay. Definitely.
thank you so much, Christian. As always, redeeming features are so much fun.
Oh, no worries, Trevor. I always enjoy doing it. I can't wait for our next cult catastrophe.
Indeed. Here with someone I've had the pleasure of knowing for quite some time, and he's quite the achievement hog, this guy. Aside from appearing and being very popular with the Cards for Soho group in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, probably one of the most popular Rockies of all time, and I can say that because I know I've been there from the start. He's also had many recent achievements overseas, and just continues to be a pretty cool guy. So, Peter Hardwig, thank you so much for talking to the Rufus Project.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Excellent. So I probably should qualify some of what you just said. Now, this podcast is basically about geekdom in all its forms, and it's pretty safe to say that you're a bit of a bodybuilding geek.
Yeah, definitely.
So before we get into your achievements, let me just ask, so what really got you into bodybuilding in the first place?
I guess feeling strong, feeling fit, and sort of, for me, I guess it's like more of an art form. It's like sort of sculpting my body the way I want it to look. I have this vision of something I want to create, but instead of, you know, painting it as a picture or building it out of clay or something, I'm just doing it with my body. It just takes a lot longer, you know, like years and years and years.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much what motivates me, I guess, and sort of got me into it.
Of course, I think when I first met you, when you came into Rocky, was in 2012, and you were, at that time, just to show you the bodybuilding goes, you were Mr. Queensland.
Yeah. No, 2009. Pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's just didn't notice me until I won Mr. Queensland.
Yeah,
just like, oh yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, there we go. And you haven't stopped there, have you? So I'll probably let you explain your most recent achievements.
So I recently went overseas to compete at the IMBA Natural Olympia, and I won. Won the overall men's Mr. Olympia in the naturals. So, that allowed me to get my pro card, the Pro Olympia for PNBA the following day, and came 6th out of 17 people. So, yeah, that was pretty awesome. First trip overseas, America, come back with that, I was pretty stoked.
I'm not at all surprised. And, I mean, it's not all bodybuilding. You're also out there helping others, doing a bit of personal training.
Yeah. So I've been working as a personal trainer for about 9 years, 9.5 years now. So, and I've got quite a diverse range of clients that I help. You know, people from obese, overweight people just wanting to lose a lot of weight, to people that I'm preparing for athletic competitions. So, yeah, I really love it. Actually, it's very rewarding.
I can't help but notice, sharing via your Facebook feed and the like, that you also seem to have quite a few, I'm happy to admit, there's damn sexy modelling shots coming through recently.
So I've been involved with a bit of, modelling and other working with photographers and artists, and it's something else that I've really enjoyed, and I guess lately, I've been getting a lot more of that sort of stuff come up, and I'll be featuring in an exhibition. Joel Devereux will be running, at the Powerhouse next month. I've been really fortunate to work with some really great, talented and skillful artists, doing, you know, modeling shots, body artists, all sorts of stuff.
Very nice. And of course, we'll put the details of that down below in the podcast description, so check that out, guys. And I guess just to bring it back to almost a lower level, with things like Rocky Horror, and I know you've done some separate acting work as well.
Yeah.
So what got you into that side of things as well?
I guess I've always enjoyed getting up on stage and performing and getting into character and just having fun. It's just finding the time to do it. I was in a musical, like, it sort of started like in 2009. I was in a musical, Peter Pan, and I played a pirate, and I had so much fun. It was awesome. And then after that, Christian called me up and said, "Oh, hey, we need a Rocky for, you know, Cards of Sorrow floor show. Would you be interested?" And I hadn't actually seen the film, and I'm like, "There's no way I can learn all Rocky's lines and parts and stuff like that." And I watched it, and I'm like, "Oh, he doesn't really do anything. He kind of just walks around with his shirt off and flexes and looks pretty." So I'm like, "Okay, whatever. I'll do that." And then I've been part of the cast since, it's been so much fun and sort of venturing out and doing a few different roles. Last year I was in a few different projects, in another musical, so getting to, I do like to sing and that sort of stuff, and it's a lot of fun.
So aside from this exhibition coming up, if people do want to find out a bit more about you or track down some of those shots, where would you suggest I start looking?
You follow me on Facebook, I guess.
I suppose to wrap this up, just so everyone out there knows, what do you geek out about?
What I geek out?
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm pretty much a geek about everything. Well, I used to, I know not a lot of people know this, but I used to play Star Wars customizable card games when I was younger. I used to collect, I used to be really good at it too. I was actually ranked number one in Queensland at one stage. I used to go to card tournaments each weekend. I don't mind sharing that now, because now Mr. Olympia's fair. I can say whatever I want about being nerdy. not care. A bit nerdy about that too, so I'm pretty pretty obsessive with planning my training, nutrition and all that sort of stuff. And I guess I'm constantly sort of monitoring my body and the changes and responses to the types of foods that I'm, you know, taking in, and nutrition and training methods that I do as well. Yeah, I don't know. I like all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I like going to see plays and theatre and stuff. And yeah, I like to, just for a bit of fun, is, you know, to sometimes do my own sort of stories and stuff that I write, and sometimes, you know, do some sketching and cartoon work and that sort of stuff as well. And I don't know, just keeping things interesting, I guess. And
that's cool. That's awesome. So even before the bodybuilding, you were
you're
already a champion.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Peter, thank you so much for talking to us. And yeah, definitely thanks for talking to the Rufus Project.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
With 2015 definitely off and racing, it's time to look at some of my upcoming events for February. On Thursday, the 5th of February at New Globe Theatre, Fortitude Valley, I'm excited to host the 30th anniversary screening of the film Desperately Seeking Susan from 1985. Iconic for being the first major film role of Madonna, and possibly one of her best. The film kicks off at 6:30, and followed by the movie, we will be playing six of Madonna's newest songs, which are soon to be released on her new album, Rebel Heart. Tickets are available at the door for $10 per person, and that is 5th of February. On Friday the 13th of February, why not get into a bit of a trash horror mood? We've got 80s trash horror flicks back to back from 9 o'clock, but before that, we have The Babadook from 2014. This Australian film, made in Adelaide, got a very limited release in 2014, very small release even in Brisbane, but we're excited to bring back The Babadook for one night only on the big screen. Now this is followed by The Deadly Spawn, Killer Workout and Toxic Avenger, three trashy 80s horror flicks. Tickets are available at the door for $10. Now $10 gets you in all night. This event kicks off at 6:30, runs right through until midnight, and tickets are available at the door. My retro parties at Calibre Lounge Fortitude Valley are now in full swing. Please keep Saturday the 21st of February free, because that will be the date of our very next retro party. Will it be 70s? Will it be 80s themed? Or will it be 90s? Watch this space and wait and see. For more details about upcoming events, visit Christian Fletcher on Facebook or visit my website www.christianfletcher.com. I look forward to seeing you at an upcoming event.
Interested in seeing The Babadook and those wonderful 80s trash horror flicks that Christian just mentioned? Guess what? Thanks to Christian's generosity, we have a double pass to go see The Babadook, followed by Killer Workout, Deadly Spawn and The Toxic Avenger at the Globe Cinema on February the 13th. That is a Friday as well, so hopefully you don't need to worry about work the next day. It starts at 6:30 and goes till 11 p.m. So how can you win this glorious, horror-filled, schlock-filled evening of entertainment? Very, very, very simple. Simply leave us a comment on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Ustream, any of the places that are linked below, and then I will also talk about a bit later on when we're letting you know how to get in touch with us, and leave the comment Babadook. Good luck. Thanks so much for listening to The Rufus Project. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Now, if you want to give us a bit of feedback, a comment, make a suggestion, a request, or enter our awesome competition, couldn't be simpler. Simply find The Rufus Project on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, on Ustream. You can head to our homepage, therufusproject.podomatic.com. And we even have an email address if you prefer, rufusreviews@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys, particularly if you have something coming up or you're someone who may be suitable for our local wildlife section. We definitely want to hear from you guys. If you want to, say, give a bit more help to the Rufus Project, you could head to our Spreadshirt store, therufusproject.spreadshirt.com.au. Small range, but is a bit of fun. Check it out. If you like it, why not buy something? Or if you're in the mood to listen to something a little bit different, check out bandcamp.com/therufusproject, our fan page, for stuff that we find interesting on Bandcamp that you can check out, and if you like it, you can buy it, support the artists, all awesome. And finally, the moral of the podcast is, if you have an actual 18 plus rating, damn well use it! Thanks for listening, and see you next time. If you're a regular person who hangs around to listen to this little end bit at the end of the podcast, thanks for sticking around, but I really do appreciate it. Thanks a lot, but seriously, I don't know what to make fun of this time around. Between the stupid warrantless metadata access and more Australian game classification madness, and then just the sheer horrible terribleness of the Garbage Pail Kids movie. I have too much, I don't know what to make fun of. So here we go. I'll go back to what I used to do last year on the podcast. So if you have a funny, sarcastic thing to say about anything in the podcast, feel free to add your own stinger. Okay? Enjoy.